This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, Rudy. Come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richter. Place to Be Nation, welcome to a great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening inside the PTBN studios. Happy to be back as always, of course, alongside my PIC, Mr. Scott Criscola, who's coming off his Giants big St. Patrick's Day weekend event, sir. And how did that go, and how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 484 of the longest episodic run-in, snow plowing motherfucking gold standard. We're very good. Over 200 at our shindig and made close to 4,000 in charitable funds for all the charities we do. So, no, it was a great night. A lot of corned beef, a lot of cabbage. Windows were open. But it was a good time. It was a good time. Thank you.
Yeah,
and JR, we are once again on the cusp of more fucking snow, which this has got to be like the worst March. We had one storm last year, I remember.
See, I feel like we say this every March. I think everyone's always like ready for winter to be over in March, and we forget that every March is like a couple of storms, and we just don't want to believe it. But the actual winter wasn't that bad this year. Like, I mean, it was like a little cold for a couple of weeks, and then had a couple of snowstorms, but nothing like huge. And now this is like the coming. I mean, we're supposed to get like 12 to 18 inches that they're saying here, which is crazy.
Oh, yeah, no, it's not as bad down here, but it's going to be slushy and shitty in the morning, but not too bad. Why don't we bring in the third member of our triumvirate this evening before we dive in?
Of course, it's a December MSG show, and that means it's probably a crappy one. So here is our correspondent for the crappiest of MSG shows. You may know him as a Sheriff Pete. Of course, he's a big old Pete Sharemarker to us, though. Pete, how are you?
Doing great. We had a damn cold front here this morning too, man. But I didn't have to wear a jacket. I had to wear a long sleeve shirt.
Oh, I'm sorry. Was it like 50?
I think it was 60.
Oh, 60. That's
oh, Jesus. Shut up.
It was like 45 here yesterday. And I felt like 80. It was like great.
Oh, God. The sun wasn't out yet.
Pete, I'll be seeing you in a few weeks, buddy.
Yeah, I know, man. Looking forward to Mania weekend. I'm heading out there. I'm heading to Houston Wednesday and then heading to Louisiana Thursday.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll be there Friday. Well, we're driving. Me, the cowboy, Roger Morset, and Mr. D'Amato are driving down from New England. So we'll be there. We're leaving here Thursday evening, and we should arrive in New Orleans around Friday, late Friday afternoon is our goal. So looking forward to that. I haven't really done a long
time. We're going to get a PTB ride-along?
Well, no, I am planning on doing some pod blasts along the way, like maybe every couple states or so, give an update, road trip update. So,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so we'll be doing that.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It'll be kind of cool. So, but Pete, yeah, we'll have the big meetup as always on WrestleMania Sunday. Some details on that to come. Stay tuned. If you're going, I'll be sharing on social media because I don't know how many of these shows, Scott, we got left. I think maybe one more before Mania.
Maybe.
But we'll be posting up where we're going. We're working on the bar right now. No tailgate this year because of the setup in New Orleans, but we will be doing a bar gathering, and we're trying. There's rumors of a 24-hour karaoke bar that we're trying to secure, so I think that'll be pretty cool.
Very cool.
I want to see Pete up on stage. You sing? You a karaoke guy, Pete?
Fuck no.
Yeah, you will. I've seen you getting pretty hammered.
I've done karaoke once my whole entire life, and that was I was actually tricked to go into this room. It was just a room full of hot girls. And they told me to go up and sing, and so I didn't have the willpower to say no, and so that's what I did.
Well,
that's it. That's my history.
It's time for your second turn at it in a couple weeks.
I'm more than happy to watch and have fun. I'll probably partake more in cocktails than singing.
But you know. Okay, we'll see.
Yeah, I know.
anyway, so looking forward to that.
To a drink I didn't like.
If you are going to Mania New Orleans, let us know. I'd be happy to have you be part of the group. Can't wait. It's just a few weeks away. Also, it was a big day today in the world of PlayStation because we finished, finally, the culmination of the PTBN Greatest WWE Wrestler Ever project that actually kicked off back in May 2017, and the top 10 dropped today. I kind of figured we'd say a little spoiler-free here, guys, so we won't reveal the top 10.
No,
feel like someone may listen to this that hasn't read it yet or hasn't gotten a chance, so we'll let them organically read it. But it was a labor of love, a lot of revisions, a lot of editing, a lot of typing, a lot of everything. But it was a blast. It was a lot of fun to do, and it's not over yet. We still have more audio coming. I know you and Nate are still doing your shows. Me and Aaron are still working through our list, and we have a few others, I think, on the way, too. So the content for the project is not done, even though the list has been fully revealed. I do want to give a shout out to a few people that really put in a ton of work. Aaron George, Tyler Kelly, and Andy Labar, along with, of course, Chad Campbell, Brad Woodling, have kind of been the main pump behind the, I don't know, I'm trying to think of the word, but the main cogs in the machine, I guess, as far as getting the posts out. Tyler was a machine churning out a lot of the written pieces, a lot of the list reveal, I should say. So big shout out to them, a lot of hard work, and I want to appreciate everyone who put in ballots and took the time to do the research. The debate was awesome. We got through it relatively unscathed, and I don't think anyone quits, besides Lee West a few times, but he's still hanging around. No one else really quit. We didn't have any fights. No one, you know, told us to go fuck off. So it was a good time. I think everyone came out in a good spot about it. So, Pete, did you enjoy
did
the project?
Parv actually turn in a ballot and come out of retirement semi?
Yeah, Parv did. No, he did not do a ballot. He just is bitching about everyone else's on PWL.
Yeah,
he
everybody said, else has sucked.
He said by not doing a ballot, that allows him to criticize everyone else's. So
exactly.
Did you enjoy the project, Pete?
Yeah, I did. You know, I always enjoy seeing what people think, and I didn't engage in it as much as I probably should have, but I did my list, and I at this point, I don't feel I need to, you know, try to talk people into voting on how I feel they should be voting. I think everyone has their own free will and can make up their own decisions and stuff, but yeah, I always enjoy seeing these type of things, because I think it's cool for historical measurements, and you know, 10 years from now, the list can completely be turned on its head. You never know.
And we enjoy this project so much, guys, that we are not done. We've actually come up with the concept of doing something like this on a yearly basis. We have a few different ideas in place, and we're actually going to kick off the next one right after WrestleMania. Because last year we started in May, and I think it was enough time. But we figured this time, if we have the idea, why not get the ball rolling? And the week after Mania, we're going to start the open nomination process. And this will give everyone 8 months to do nominations and research. And that is, Scott and Pete, the Greatest WWE Tag Team Ever project. So I felt like the next general evolution, we had a couple of other ideas that we're going to save for future years. But for this year, we figured we'd dive into tag teams. The rules and ramifications and the rubric, as some may say, have not been finalized just yet. We're working on that, so stay tuned. But across our social media pages at ProWrestlingOnly.com, we will be revealing the details. But following WrestleMania, we will be doing the Greatest WWE Tag Team list ever. So, Scott, any thoughts on that?
I think it's tremendous. you know, similar. I mean, some of the obviously will be specific differences based on tag teams, but you know, probably a lot of the criteria will be kind of the same, but with a couple of different things since we're dealing with teams. But I think this will be even more. I think there'll be even more debate and excitement because you know tag teams are very special to a lot of people, and you know there's not as many, so it'd be very interesting to see how the list stretches out. But it should be great. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, and it'll be. I think everyone kind of gets the concept now. Like a lot of people that had done the PWO Greatest Wrestler Ever were in this, so they kind of got it. But I think for a lot of people too, it was kind of new. So I think everyone's got the cadence down, got the flow down, the conversation. So I think it'll – I'm hoping, too, it'll move a little bit smoother on that level as well. What do you think of this one, Pete?
Yeah, I think it'll be a little bit more – I think it might even be a little bit more interesting because I think here – I mean, tag teams traditionally in the WWE, WWF have not been put in the position to draw money in a way, you know? So, like that factor might come into differently – you know, you might not view it as high on like the system or the system we might that might be set up. You know, what would a team like Savage and Hogan, even though they only tagged a few matches or for have you, would they be high because they headline pay-per-views, or, you know, it all depends on what the criteria is going to be. I think the criteria should be different for tag teams, because I think they've been treated a lot differently than single stars in the WWF.
Yeah, then the criteria will have to differ, too, in some ways. Like, promo, I think, is a big one, too, right? Because, like, promo slash character wasn't always as big in a tag team ranks. So I think that has to shift how we look at that. And yeah, same thing, Pete, along, like, the jump-up moments and the being in a position to be have big matches. I think work rate will actually maybe factor in a little bit more highly here, in a way, because the tag teams are always looked at more in that light versus character driven. So it'll be interesting. We are going to have a minimum, I think, of times tagged as well as part of the criteria. Like, you know, something like whatever, they had to be have at least like five matches or something, you know, something along those lines. So you can't just get like a one-time super team and throw them on the list. But I think it'll be interesting. Like you said, Scott, is the depth is much different, which I think adds a nice layer to the creativity of the list too, to see who really right. fills out the back end. So anyway, we just wanted to get that announcement out there. So stay tuned. We'll have more to come. And like I said, the nomination should open up. If you are interested in the project, just let us know. And we're already going to start at least getting the Facebook page like we had for the GWWE project set up. And we'll get you added there as we start to flesh things out. But yeah, looking forward to it. I'm hoping we get the same amount of participation and excitement. It seems like, you know, we're back and forth. Like, are people kind of burnt out? Do they want to keep going? But I mean, the response was so good for this one, and everyone was already kind of throwing ideas out for the next one and everything else. So I think the excitement is there to go ahead and keep this going. So we want to roll right into the next one, and we'll see how it goes, and we'll go from there. So, but anyway, all that said, Scott, why don't we go ahead and get to our main course for the evening?
Yes, and as you mentioned a moment ago, JR, we are concluding 1987. It's been a pretty good year. Mm-hmm. It's had some ups, some downs. But this is the final show of the calendar year, and you said where we are. We're on the big, the cathedral on 33rd Street, December 26th, 1987, live from Madison Square Garden in New York City. Now, it's a pretty hefty show tonight. We got a lot of stuff to talk about, and right out of the gate. Now, JR, on our last episode, when we did that Saturday night's main event, there was an unprecedented, of course, that was taped, but on that Saturday, there were five shows booked that night. Now, one of them was canceled, so only four happened. But tonight is a first. Including our show, there was, on this Saturday, not one, not two, six shows on this night. Three double dips.
Jesus Christ.
Three matinees and three primetimes. So, and most of them were on this side of the, we didn't go far into the, except into the Midwest, but there were two on this side of the country. Now, what makes this even cooler is I was at one of them.
Oh, boy.
Because on the matinee of this show at Madison Square Garden, during the day, they were at my beloved and venerable New Haven Coliseum for the day show, which I was at. It was the day after Christmas. Here was the card. A little different than what we will see tonight. The Midgets, the same Midget tag teams, because we have that tonight, they wrestled. I'll leave that there. Dino Bravo defeated SD Jones. Ted DiBiase defeated Hacksaw Jim Duggan by disqualification. Ray Rougeau pinned Haku. The bout was to have been the Islanders versus the Rougeaus, but Tama failed to appear. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Brutus Beefcake pinned Greg Valentine. Ricky Steamboat defeated the Honky Tonk Man via countout. George Steele was the guest ref.
Gross.
Riveting. I know. Randy Savage and Rick Rude, a 20-minute draw. Hmm. And I remember that match actually being very good. Coco Beware pinned Sika. And B. Brian Blair and Jim Brunzel defeated the Conquistadors. Ugh. So.
Okay.
I know. There was that show. The draw was good. I'll leave it at that. All right. Our next double dip. One show was at the Onondaga War Memorial in Syracuse. And all it says is included the tag team champions Strikeforce. The night show was at the Memorial Auditorium, or as Pete, old school hockey fan, as knows, it used to be called the Odd in Buffalo. Here was the card. Dan Spivey defeated Lanny Poffo. Steve Lombardi beat Tony Garea. Billy Jack Haynes and Ken Patera fought Demolition to a double DQ. Listen to this. Jim Powers defeated Bret Hart. The bout was scheduled to be the Hart Foundation versus the Young Stallions, but Neidhart did not appear as scheduled. Probably fell asleep in the back. After the bout, Hart claimed it was a fluke and challenged Roma to a match. And then Paul Roma beat him again. Ugh. The Ultimate Warrior, who was subbing for Paul Orndorff, defeated the King Harley Race. And your women's tag team champions, the Glamour Girls, defeated the Jumping Bomb Angels. Oh, and in the main event, Bam Bam Bigelow defeated King Kong Bundy.
That's a good little card.
That was a good little card. Now, the third double dip.
That would be a good little card. The only thing going for it is the Bomb Angels and the Glamour Girls. That sounds terrible.
Oh, come on. Give the Young Stallions a little credit. I'm sure they gave. I'm sure
come
Brett
on,
gave
Pete,
them
you don't want to see Young Stallions individually beat Bret Hart? It's a great card.
I see Bret Hart doing 7-minute matches with each of them at tops, honestly.
No Ken Patera, huh? No love for Ken Patera. All right. No and the final. The final double dip.
Bundy might be a little fun.
Yeah, well, when we saw the MSG one with them, was pretty good.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Now, the early, the final double dip, the early show was at, this had to be the early show because I'm sure the other show was a prime time. This was at the Sports Arena in Toledo, Ohio, 8,261, so probably a pretty good crowd. Pepe Gonzalez and Little Coco defeated Bad Boy Brown and Killer Cruz. So we had two midget tag matches in two different loops.
It is December. December's midget month, I've noticed. That's
yes.
Usually when they
Hillbilly Jim pinned Barry Horowitz. Danny Davis pinned Sam Houston. Ron Bass defeated the Junkyard Dog. British Bulldogs defeated the Bolsheviks. Don Morocco defeated Slick, subbed for Butch Reed via countout. Interesting. Jake Roberts pinned Ron Bass, who was subbing for Hercules. Ron Bass had to do double duty. And the main event, Hulk Hogan pinned the one-man gang to retain his title in Hogan's Toledo debut.
Oh, well.
And the night show.
10,000 on top on that garbage card. Wow.
Yep. Yep.
Wow.
And the night show, this had to have been the night show, was at another big venue, the Rosemont Horizon. In suburban Chicago, 12,000 there. Your card, Hillbilly Jim defeated Barry Horowitz, subbing for Ron Bass because he worked two earlier in the day, so he got the night off.
He was tired.
The tag match happened again. Hercules, who showed up for the show, defeated the Junkyard Dog. Danny Davis pinned Sam Houston again. Don Morocco, subbing for superstar Billy Graham, defeated Butch Reed. So Butch Reed showed up. Nobody showed up in Toledo. Everybody showed up in Chicago. Wow, what a shock. The Bulldogs defeated the Bolsheviks again. Ted DiBiase pinned Jake Roberts. And the main event, Hulk Hogan once again successfully defended his title against the one-man gang. Nick Bockwinkel was the special referee. And after the match, Hogan was attacked and busted open by Ted DiBiase and Virgil. Mm. So
that sounds like they went all out in Chicago, at least.
Yes. And everybody else took the night off in Toledo. So a busy day on this Saturday in 1987. Six shows. All three loops were kicking ass.
All right, we have a few notes as well from our last time we talked. Saturday's main event on 12/19 Superstars. Craig DeGeorge conducted an interview with Hulk Hogan where he rejected Ted DiBiase's offer to purchase the world heavyweight title. Mm-hmm. And on 12/19/87, gentlemen, the Slammy Awards aired, taking place from Caesars Atlantic City, the second edition, although referred to as the 37th annual. The show did an impressive 6.2 national rating and a 15 share, finishing second in his time slot, only to Saturday Night Live. Quickly, here are the results. Best performance by an animal, George Animal Steel. Woman of the Year, Miss Elizabeth. Best Ring Apparel, Harley Race. The Hulk Hogan Real American Award was superstar Billy Graham. The Jesse the Body Award was Ravishing Rick Rude, which we'll now hear for the next 6 years. The Greatest Hit, Jim Duggan. The Manager of the Year, none of the above. Best Landscaper, Best Personal Hygiene, Nikolai Volkoff, Boris Zukov, and Slick. Best Vocal Performance, Jim Duggan. Song of the Year, no winner. The envelope was eaten by Sika. Best Group, One Man Gang, which is pretty funny. Humanitarian of the Year, Ted DiBiase. And Best Head, Gene Oakland and Bam Bam Bigelow. And the Bobby Heenan Scholarship Award, won by the Islanders, Andre the Giant, Hercules, King Kong Bundy, and Harley Race. So there you go, the Slammy Awards. You can hear Jeff Fischotto's thoughts on the last Jeff Learns Wrestling as well. 12/26 episode of Superstars, earlier the day of the show, Davey Boy Smith and Dynamite Kid fought the Islanders to no contest when the Islanders stole Matilda and ran backstage with her after attacking the Bulldogs from behind when they got distracted by Bobby Heenan. So, big storyline kicking off there. I'm sure we'll be talking much more about
which
that.
Which does get mentioned on the show, yes.
It does, it does. So they were right continuity. On top of it. All right, we're back in MSG, closing out the year. Gorilla, Alfred, and Bobby in the booth for the night, and Gorilla mocks Bobby's hair. And then runs down the card. And that leads us to our opener, Scott's 80th best WWE wrestler of all time, Special Delivery Jones, taking on Iron Mike Sharp. We open with this 1985 Time Warp match. It's, I mean, it's like they're not even hiding that December is like the slum month. Like, all right, dig up this match. It was a leftover. It could have actually been the match from 85 that they spliced in. I don't know. But, it, I mean, it basically was like a match that would have opened a card in 85. We haven't seen SD for a while. We kick things off against a plodding Sharp. Gorilla talks about SD moving to Philly from Antigua, and Bobby jokes about it. Gorilla also notes SD's new haircut as Sharp is stalling. Sharp finally engages, but Jones is all over him, lands a backdrop that sends Mike right out to the floor. Bobby says SD looks like Bill Cosby and says he doesn't know how to even... Bobby says he looks like Bill Cosby, but he doesn't even know how to write his own name. SD slings Sharp back in, continues to work him over until Mike slips free and bails again. He returns and kicks SD off a test of strength and slugs away. Runs SD headfirst to the corner, but that doesn't work, which Gorilla, of course, points out. Mike bails and regroups, but then he comes back and goes to the eyes. Sharp chops and punches away until SD blocks a kick with an atomic drop and a boot to the gut. Sharp stumbles outside and wipes out some chairs. He slides back in, and SD peppers him with strikes until he gets tangled in the ropes. The ref eventually busts Sharp free, and Mike lays in a heavy blow to a ducking SD. SD hits a backdrop and slam for two and a headbutt for another two count. Sharp then slugs SD across the neck with a real hard punch and covers for the win. Kind of a shock. Heenan's yucking it up as the crowd is booing. Exactly what you expect it to be, plodding and aimless. And the finish was neat, but nothing else really going on. I give it a half star. The Chad Campbell special, Scott.
Yes, the Chad Campbell special. Yeah, I gave this a half star as well. Yeah, it was a rough open. And you could tell, I think the biggest thing to say here is you talked about the fact that December was like the throwaway month. Mm-hmm. But and even in the commentary, because I think it's funny that Bobby says something and Gorilla goes, you know, this is family programming. You need to stop, you need to slow down and relax and, you know, have to understand our audience. Meanwhile, about literally 2 seconds before, we get 4 minutes of Terry Garvin and Pat Patterson innuendos.
It's, like, it's a family audience. We can do the look at that Negro with his hard head.
Yeah, exactly. But the match is rough, and you could easily tell that. This is the example, and I mentioned this a few times. I'm curious your thoughts, both of you guys, that because I've said in the past on past house shows that I feel like that MSG gets taken advantage of for being MSG. You're going to get a sellout whether you have, 12 midget matches because it's the Garden. So all the other, like, for instance, as I mentioned earlier, Hogan went to Toledo because if Hogan's not there, you're not going to get 8,000 people in that right. Sweat box. Yeah. So we get all the dumpster shit in December here because it's the Garden and everybody, it was a sellout. So obviously, 18, 19,000 were there to watch this. So I think that's, I'm starting to finally figure that out, that the Garden sometimes gets taken for granted as the venue that's always going to sell out, even if you give them utter garbage. And this show is a perfect example of that because, they sent Hogan to Toledo.
Yeah.
Chicago. But, again, Vince was testing the waters, obviously, in the Midwest and other venues to see how Hogan's doing. Obviously, he's in the midst of his run, so everything's great. But they'll put Hogan in a venue like Toledo because they need bodies there because they know that 18,000 will sell out here if you give them whatever the hell it is.
And then that's also why they had Bockwinkle as a special ref in Chicago since that was an AWA town.
Exactly. So they had to work those towns in, and I think they take the Garden for granted.
It's granted, but they're also, it's a pretty decent-sized main event here, so it's not like it's...
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Nothing. Absolutely.
But I do think your point is valid. I mean, I do think they know that they'll get a pretty good crowd. I'm sure, too, the day after Christmas, it's always kind of a tradition, right? I mean, to this day, they're still there, like Christmas week. So I think it's, I think they probably do figure they can take a break a little bit.
Yeah, no, definitely. So, anyway, Pete, there's not much more to say here. I think that's pretty much what this is. This is a haughty opener while people are coming in late. Maybe the weather sucked and they're sludging in from the subway.
Yeah, but it's clearly get your popcorn soda a match. But I liked it a lot more than you guys because I liked it because of how simple the simplicity it was, and it was like they barely touched each other, but everything they did got over. All Sharp stalling, it did lead to a fun payoff. This was kind of a fun match where absolutely nothing happens, but I thought Sharp's bump off the low blow was glorious, where he goes out into the freaking chairs and stuff.
He loved that bouncing into the chairs thing.
Yeah, I mean, for what it was, I mean, I honestly thought this was the second best match on the show.
Oh boy!
Now,
oh wow!
I had five matches of these guys of people doing similar shtick. It wouldn't work.
Yeah.
But because this shtick was the only time it was really used today, where they were pretty much just walking and talking and just trying to get reactions from the crowd by just setting up simple spots, I thought it worked. And I thought Sharp was really good at stalling. I thought Jones was pretty over as good as an underneath babyface could. I mean, he seemed more over than some of the guys who should be more over. And it could be because, you know, the show's just starting.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think opening the show usually helps in that regard.
It helped.
Yeah.
The spot where I think this match might have died a death on it is a different spot on the card. But because it opened, it did get over with the crowd, which, I mean, you guys have got to agree with that. I can totally understand you guys not liking it because, I mean, I totally understand that. But sometimes it's just one of those things where I like seeing a match where they're just trying to work the crowd and try to engage the crowd. So I enjoyed it for what they were doing. Was it a work rate classic? No, not even in a million years would I put it as a work rate classic. But it's something I enjoyed with what they were trying to do.
Second best match of the night. Okay, we got an interesting night ahead of us. I'm kind of sharped out, to be honest. We haven't seen him a lot, but I didn't mind him like the first time. But I don't know. The 85, like, with him was, like, where they were having him go, like, 20-minute draws and shit. Like, I just kind of get done with him then. I kind of check out now when I see him.
Like, it went 8 minutes, so I thought it was, like, the perfect time. Dude.
Yep, your official match time, by the way, 7:33. So, yeah, about 7.5 minutes. So.
Yep. All right.
It didn't overstay its welcome either, like, go 14 minutes or whatever. Then it really got an old. So, for me, I felt this was the perfect kind of Memphis sticky type of match, and it worked for me.
All right. Well, let's see what the rest of the card holds. Next up,
I wouldn't give a star rating to either because of what it was and stuff.
Just making shit up as you go, Pete. Yep. All right. Big tag match up next. Interesting tag match. The Fabulous Rougeau brothers are taking on Los Conquistadores. The Conquistadors on this evening, played by Jose Estrada Sr. and Jose Ruiz Rivera, our old friend. Tag action up next. The Rougeaus are kind of losing steam as faces. They're not really in any feud or any kind of contention, and they battle the Conquistadors here, making their Madison Square Garden debut. Two masked Latin American stars. Get some talk about Rey being multilingual as they discuss the tag team ranks. Gorilla and Al talk about the difficulties of wrestling in masks and trying to figure out what to call them. Conquistador 1 and Rey open up and trade some offense, with Rey grabbing a roll-up and a sunset flip. For two counts, Rey runs through both Conquistadors, cleaning house and standing tall. We reset with Conquistador 2 and Jacques with 2 working a side headlock, but Jacques eventually sends him and 1 to the floor with monkey flips. 2 ends up regaining control, choking away Jacques and tying him in the ropes. 1 comes in and splashes him in the ropes, but Rey knocks him to the floor. 2 comes in, charges, but Jacques breaks free and backdrops him up and over right into 1 on the floor. We reset again. The Rougeaus are quick tagging and double teaming 2, focusing on the leg. Gorilla and Bobby asks Bobby why he doesn't have more teams in a stable, and Bobby dodges it. The legwork continues for a while as 1 was able to counter Jacques into a suplex to take control. The crowd starts to lose interest as the Conquistadors double team in the corner, choking away before 2 grabs a front chancery. Conquistadors continue to work tags and double teams as Gorilla chastises the Rougeaus' continuity as a team. Jacques tries to make some comebacks and nabs a couple of near falls with desperation moves before he hits a back suplex into the hot tag. Rey cleans house and both Conquistadors, battering them around, tags Jacques and they hit the Le Bombe de Rougeau for the win. I thought it was fine enough, but it felt like it was in slow motion throughout, and I thought it went a bit too long. But I did like the end. I thought that was hot. That stretch in the middle dragged, but that said, I thought it was fine, kind of paint-by-numbers tag match. The Rougeaus desperately need some kind of hook to get moving again, and I didn't mind some of the double teams and cheating, but again, that stretched in a little bit long. But I did go 2 stars, because to me, a good old paint-by-numbers tag match, that's kind of like the lowest you can go in my eyes, because at the end of the day, the formula still works to a certain extent. Pete, what did you have for this one?
I want 1.5 stars. I enjoyed some of this stuff. Like, I really enjoyed, like, early on where one of the Conquistadors, it makes no sense what he did, but it's still a pretty impressive bump, how he dove, well, one of them dove over one of the Rougeau brothers. He looked like he was trying to do a spear, but he dove over him and onto the other Conquistador on the floor. I thought that was pretty impressive. I thought the bump down the finish really big. I thought the Contessa's doors bumped really big for him down at the finish. And yeah, it was totally paint by numbers. It was a solid match. I just thought, the Rujos to me brought nothing to this. I thought the Conquistadors did as everything they could to make the Rujos look good, but the Rougeau brothers,
Jacques
Le
Rougeau.
Those damn French Canadians. I thought they were pretty lackluster, lazy, crappy baby faces, and I thought the finish looked pretty. I'm with Gorilla. I looked a little weak on the Rougeau's. I can't even say it. The Rougeau, God, the brothers.
The Ragu's.
I can't even know why.
Good You'd be God. A great heel ring announcer at the Forum in Montreal.
Yeah, Jacques Rougeau. There we go. Finally. And, I give it a star and a half. It did have, it followed a pretty much a Southern Tag structure, but. Yeah, but the brothers are just terrible baby faces, and the Conquistadors are what they are. So, still solid tag.
You would be a great heel ring announcer up there, Jack and Ray Ragu. I gave it a star and a half. It was a little rough though. Like it was very clunky at times, and I do feel like already that the Rougeaus just aren't handling it as baby faces. Like they weren't really flowing in the match. I was kind of expecting more out of it, even with, Jose Estrada Sr. and, Jose Luis,
Jose Luis Rivera,
who's fucking terrible, that the Rougeaus could have at least saved it a little bit, but I feel like they barely could. I mean, it was very clunky.
It was slow motion. Everything felt slow. Niall said everything felt in slow motion. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was rough. It was rough. And I think, yeah. And I feel like the Rougeaus maybe need kind of a facelift. I mean, 88 is going to be a big year for tags, and, maybe they need something to kind of work themselves into something different. But I think the babyface thing's just not working because this match.
Like Jimmy Hart, maybe?
What a novel idea. Maybe. Who knows? No. But yeah, it was rough. It was rough. Two jobbers are in masks, but the Rougeau should have made this match look a lot better, and they didn't. So star and a half for me.
Yeah, it was definitely disappointing. It may assist the December doldrums. I don't know. but yeah, just everything felt a step slower than normal. But they may be getting bored, too, with the face. I don't know. Maybe they felt like they needed a change, too. So we'll see. All right, up next we have Hacksaw Jim Duggan taking on Sika. And this is actually the MSG debut for Duggan, guys. We've talked about him. He's had a tumultuous 1987 up and down, but he actually has not debuted in the Garden until now. Sika still hanging around doing his thing in the lower mid-card. Duggan gets a good pop and lots of hose. Duggan stomps around. We get a lockup on and off. Duggan works the arm as Al compares Sika to an animal, and the more you cage him, the more wild he gets. Sika punches away, but Duggan maintains control of the arm as Bobby explains the difference between a 2x4 and Hercules' chain. We also get some talk about Duggan's issues with Harley Race as Sika goes to the eyes and rams Hacksaw to the corner. Duggan regains control, goes right back to the arm, and starts to unload some heavy strikes. Gorilla says Sika can take a lot of punishment to the head, of course. As Sika goes to the eyes again, Sika pounds with basic offense. Duggan gets a pair of near falls on desperation attempts, and then eventually hits a clothesline and finishes Sika with a running clothesline for the win and pop. I thought this sucked, plotting and filled with pedantic strikes and nothing more, but Duggan was real over, and the ending was fine, so I'm not going to go dud. But it was not a great showcase for Duggan, and Sika was not as good as we've seen him in spots at all either. So I went half a star here again. Like I said, it was just enough and Duggan being over, but just not the best showcase or debut for Duggan. Scott.
Just to let you know, the runtime of the previous match was 13:07. Your runtime,
like 43:07, that one.
Yeah, well, this felt like the runtime for this match was 9:16, and it felt like 99:16. Mm-hmm. I gave this a dud. It was fucking awful. I'm sorry. Pops are not enough for me. And yes, I know I'm not a big Duggan fan, but.
You aren't?
Nah.
And he's like one of the nicest people in real life, too.
Mm-hmm. Does nothing for me. Then why can't he be a nice person here? Because he's not. He's a drooling idiot who sucks.
Right.
And this match is awful. That clothesline finisher was fucking horrendous. Sika's terrible. it just moved along way too slow. This didn't need to be 9 minutes. I would have made this – if you really wanted to put Duggan over, you should have beat Sika in like 3 minutes. There's probably more Sika trying to milk every last bit of, you know, Vince Sr. Cred that he has left. Because this match should have been over. If you really want to get Duggan over, he could have beat Sika in like 2.5 minutes, like a good superstars length match instead of fucking 9 minutes. Awful. Absolutely awful. I think it exposed Duggan as a guy who really doesn't have much in the ring. And he's facing a guy who's old, fat, and fucking useless right now anyway. So the whole process of booking this just was wrong. Even Rob Houston would have hated this fucking match.
I can't even hear that song anymore without hearing Jeremy Nichols' cherub laugh throughout it from the time we had him on.
Yes. That's right. Yeah, this is just – it was the shits, Pete. If you say this is the best match – if you say this is the best match after the opener, I don't know what the hell to do.
No, it's not happening. I'm not a fan of it either. I gave it a half a star. I thought Duggan's early punches looked good. Other than that, it was just – there was nothing going on. Sika can't bump, won't bump.
Duggan can bump.
You know.
Duggan is a bump.
You know, it's just – but, you know, Duggan, WWF Duggan just is just not – it's not a fun wrestler. Mid-South Duggan's a fun wrestler. Mm-hmm. It's like a totally different animal. Here he's, you know, I mean, he right from the back, from Jump Street, and this is his debut here at MSG, he knows this that brawling style ain't gonna, is not what he needs to do here. And so, bottom line, the dude's over. But, man, I think Sika is like one of the world's worst workers. I think the guy is terrible and brings nothing to the table. And Afa's not much better. They're just terrible. And I would hate to have that work them as my debut match in MSG or Jim Duggan.
Yeah, you certainly do. Didn't help either.
It's been a while. All right. Moving on, we have our big women's title match here. It's our champion, Sensational Sherry, taking on old Rockin' Robin. Of course, Robin gets a crack after an okay showing in Survivor Series, and she has a sports coat on over her tights, which I thought was an interesting decision. Sherry has a more wild outfit on, and she screams at the fans before we get started, and Al says Robin may not look like an excellent wrestler, but Sherry shouldn't overlook her. Oh, that was a great line. He's basically just admitting what fucking garbage she is. She may not look like an excellent wrestler. Okay. Well, what does she have going for her then, Alfred? Gorilla trolls Bobby over having no titles in his stable as we get a lockup. Robin hits a pair of arm drags and then stays with the arm, which she controls for a bit. Sherry works through it, dodges Robin to take over, starting to viciously live through Sherry as well. Starting to viciously kick away at her. Sherry slams Robin hard and slings her to the outside as Al and Gorilla debate Robin's weight. Robin crawls under the ring and emerges from the other side and then dropkicks Sherry from behind, knocking her over the top to the floor. Robin chases Sherry around the ring and yanks her back in, hits a leaping clothesline for two. Robin follows up with a bulldog for a near fall, then slams Sherry off the top rope. Robin tries an elbow off the middle rope, but Sherry dodges it, and she crashes and burns. The two trade blows on their knees as Bobby says women can't punch. Robin spikes Sherry to the mat for two and stomps away, and Robin goes to the middle rope again, but this time Sherry gets up the knees for the win. Not good. Robin shows a flash or two, but it's just so fucking awkward. Sherry didn't show much offense yet again, and she gets beat on for most of the match before stealing the win, which has kind of been the trope for her so far, and the crowd didn't seem to care either. Sherry needs better to show better, and Robin, I don't know what they see in her. We saw 10 women at Survivor Series, Scott, and I would say Robin was probably tied with, like, Dawn Marie for the 10th, for the fucking 10th spot.
Yeah.
Like, any of the other women in that match would have been better here, and that includes old-ass, stale, shitbag Moolah, who isn't much better, but at least could have maybe done something. Robin is just, I mean, she's so awkward, so stiff, such a board out there. No charisma, just the existence, the absence of personality, Rockin' Robin. Pete, what did you think of this, and what do you think of Robin?
Yeah, I didn't like the match, and I don't like Rockin' Robin. I give the match 3/4 of a star. But I will say Sherry reminds me a lot of Rita from the old Power Rangers TV show. I don't know. All the times I always think of Rita Repulsa whenever I see Sherry, and I can never really get into her matches, but yeah, it's you know, I don't mind her getting beat on and then getting the cheap win because that's fine heel psychology and stuff. But yeah, it's just Robin's just such a vanilla baby face. It just doesn't. It's not even why. Yeah, I'm with you.
Well, I don't know if it's the Jake tie-in at the same, like if they're doing a family favor or if they actually saw something in her. Because like Scott, we talked about, like we saw Velvet McIntyre the last couple times we've seen her. She's been real good. You know,
yeah.
And it's like, then you got Robin out there. It just looks like shit. And, I mean, she'll stay around, as we'll see, but I just don't know what they saw in her. It's not like she was, like, super good-looking either. It's not like, you know, Vince had a freaking hard-on for her and wanted to get her out. I mean, I don't know what it is about her with that stupid jacket over the suit and everything. I don't know. It's just nothing. It brings nothing to the table. I don't get
it. I think they hadn't known. I didn't know what to do with the women's division ever since, what's her name left?
Wendy Richter.
Scott's, big draw.
Yeah.
Wendy Richter.
Yeah, but I mean, they still had other women. Like I said, Velvet was over at Survivor Series. She was good in that other MSG match. Bring back Desiree Peterson, for God's sakes. Even she was better. You know, they got the Glamour Girls. Split them up. Give Judy a push. Anyone. Like, they had pieces to make something happen. But Robin is just a weird import. I think
they didn't give a shit, and they just plopped it here, you know?
I guess. Go get Tina Ferrari from Glow. Whatever it is.
There we go.
Your length of the match, 7:30, which is about 7:20 too long.
Go get Liberty Bell.
Yeah, Liberty Bell.
Zoya the Destroyer.
Miss Kong, or what the hell was her name? Grandma Kong, whatever the hell her name was. I gave this a dud. I couldn't give it anything. I love Sherry, and she's a good heel. But and Rocket Robin's jacket, all she needs is like one of those little tiny hats. She could be like a 1940 movie usher. That's what that fucking jacket looks like.
She should have been driving the fucking Shriner car that I saw on the parade the other day.
Yeah, she'd walk around with one of those, like, you know, like those women that used to have, you know, like at casinos back in the day, and she'd have the little tray with the fucking cigarettes in it. That's what she looked like. And Alfred's line's great. She doesn't look like much. Well, she isn't much. This will just fucking set it.
If 40-year-old Alfred is basically calling you fucking ugly, then you're in trouble.
Yeah. Because he's like number two on the pervert chart in that company behind fucking Gene.
He may have actually been higher at this point.
Yeah. I mean, he's just – the match is fucking abysmal. It's absolutely abysmal. Anybody – a guy in Velvet, Desiree Peterson – I mean, anybody. Mm-hmm. It's just brutal. She's awful. You know, nepotism is one thing. You already got her fucking loser brother in the company. He's moderately better. But, I mean, she's abysmal. How many more Smiths are there? What does Jake have, like, any cousins or anything? I mean, how many more fucking, you know, relatives does he have to bring to this company?
Rod Smith.
It's awful. Who?
Rod Smith. Is he the
running back? Rod Smith. Yes, Rod Smith, the wide receiver for the Broncos.
Oh, that's what I'm thinking of. Who's the running back for the Cowboys nowadays? Rod, what's his name? The backup?
Oh,
Rod Smith.
Yeah, it is Rod Smith,
too.
Yeah.
All right.
Rod Smith,
actually,
too.
Third stringer, but that's the point.
All right, how about Steve Smith? Bring him in?
Steve Smith
Sr., all of them.
Taco Smith? Oh, no, it's not Taco Smith. I mean, this is terrible. It's terrible on all levels. She's just not good. She doesn't know what she's doing. She literally looks like a deer in headlights half the time. And I mean,
Smith
and sadly, normally I'll give a half star just for Sherry's effort, but she barely could do anything with this either. So back to back duds for me.
I think the only thing going for Rockin' Robin is she's relatively young. So I think maybe they're going for a younger, skewing a young, like kind of a Wendy Richter appeal to young girls. I mean,
she had some charisma.
Like,
you know, she had some charisma. It was decent looking. Had some energy. Like, Robin's just toast.
She looks like
a piece
Walmart
of fucking toast.
Who no one wants to hang out with. So I don't know. I agree. I'm just saying that's probably what Vince was looking for, though.
She looks like she works at Walmart. I mean,
she'd be the first to die in any, like, movie. Horror movie.
she'd be the first one Jason puts a spear in.
There's no personality. Like a fucking communion wafer.
Communion wafer. Oh, God. All right.
Before the body of Christ enters it. That's how fucking bland she is.
Oh,
was
my God.
Christ,
all right.
Was that Pete?
Amen, Robin.
Amen, Robin.
Sheriff Pete.
All right.
Yeah, okay. Fuck her. All right, our next match. And Pete, I feel like you were here. I'm curious your take on this match because I think you were here the last time these two guys fought. I remember you crapping all over the match, if I'm correct.
Yes, I did.
Okay, all right, good. My memory serves well. And that is the rehashing of the old Dream Team feud, and that is Brutus Beefcake taking on Greg the Hammer Valentine. Big time Dream Team Explosion match. Rematch from July. That's when the Sheriff was last year. Hammer is finally done with Dino Bravo as well. He's taking on Jimmy Hart as a manager again. To which Gorilla says, change Valentine for the better. Al agrees, points out what Jimmy's done for the Hart Foundation and Honky as well. Beefer gets a hot reaction as he struts out. His hair is growing longer and is further adapting to his barber gimmick. We get some stalling to start before it quickly falls into a heavy slugfest that Brutus wins. Al reminds us that Hammer's a slow starter, could be had with an early pinfall. Beefer starts to work the leg as the fans are just super hyped for this. Hammer bails to regroup, and when he returns, we get another big slugfest, and the crowd fires up a loud Beefcake chant. They're just batshit right now. Hammer collapses after Beefcake hammers away in the corner. Hammer reverses some punches into a choke and punches of his own, as the two are just rolling on the mat, crushing each other with right hands. Things spill outside where Hammer spikes Beefcake into a chair and chucks it across his back. Beefcake lands some shots as he returns to the ring, but Hammer goes to the leg to cut him down and gets back to work, choking and slugging away. Gorilla talks about his experiences in the past wrestling Greg as the Hammer clobbers Beefcake with an axe off the top. Hammer keeps bringing the heat while going for pin covers and then cranks a rear chin lock, but Beefcake fights free, but he can't take control. Hammer lands a clothesline for two, but Beefcake blocks a suplex and gets one of his own to a big pop. Beefcake follows the shoulder block, but runs into a back elbow and gets pitched outside. And when he returns, Hammer meets him with an ugly double underhook suplex that falls apart halfway through. It ends with a really ugly neck bump for Beefcake. Hammer gets two off of that, but Beefcake fires up and the two trade hard punches. Hammer goes back up top, but Beefcake meets him with a punch to the gut and starts to unload with a flurry of offense. Hammer cuts him off with a backbreaker for two, and Gorilla bitches him out for not hooking the leg. They trade some punches, but Hammer lands a boot to the gut. Beefcake floats over on a slam and hooks a sleeper to a pop, but Jimmy hops on the apron with scissors to distract him. Beefcake chases Jimmy around the ring and to the back and gets counted out, giving Hammer the win. Beefcake returns with the scissors, and the two brawl for a moment, with Beefcake avoiding the figure four and forcing Hammer to run away. That's a questionable finish, but it kind of works. You have to keep Hammer a little bit protected. They just rebooted him as a single star. They're pumping him up, taking on Jimmy Hart, saying how much it's going to improve his career. You can't have him lose here. And you also got to keep Beefcake a little bit protected, too. And him being so obsessed with Jimmy Hart, I think, is a good way to do it. Fun and hard hitting, some rough bumps, some stiff punches, and a good bout. I thought it woke the crowd up, and the heat was boiling the whole time. Like, I thought the crowd was super into this. I went 2.5 stars, Scott.
I went 2.5 as well. Your official match time is 11:53. Yeah, I like this a lot. The one thing, I guess it's just the way that Gorilla's tone of voice was, but he made it sound like that, like Valentine never had Jimmy as a manager, lest we forget that he was his manager when he was Intercontinental Champion. I mean, Gorilla, do we have that? Gorilla was like not on tonight. Something was off with him tonight. I don't know. Maybe if he like half-assed this show like the fucking Bookers did, but, he's like, oh, Valentine has been rejuvenated since he's been with Jimmy Hart. And he could have said, like, you know, he was great once before with him, and he acted. I don't know if that was Vince saying, you know, we have to erase the last 2 years. I don't know. But
or you're just probably taking Gorilla too much of his word. He probably didn't mean what he was saying.
Yeah, probably not. But a solid back and forth, you know, more of Gorilla trashing the ref. Why is he counting the two of them? They're not on their backs. It's like, it's strange. I thought the ending was kind of lame, though. I get that we have to protect Valentine. I did like the post-match where Valentine was trying to duck the figure, you know, duck the sleeper and stuff because he didn't want to lose his hair. I'd have been perfectly happy with, like, Valentine cheating to win or something, maybe to keep him. I mean, it's Beefcake at this point. Maybe he's moderately bullet, I don't want to say bulletproof, but I think he could eat a cheap loss and maybe get his heat back in some other capacity. But I don't know. I thought the ending was a little weak, but the match itself was solid, Pete. I mean, I don't know if you think it's better than the one we watched in July. I thought it was a little bit better than the one in July.
I gave this. I don't remember what I gave the last one. I gave this one 1.75. I thought it was solid. But I mean, Beefcake is bulletproof. But I also feel like doesn't he headline SummerSlam in 6 months from now?
No. Year and a half.
Oh, the year and a half. Okay. This is where he gets into his feud after Honky Tonk, I guess. Okay. Well, I think they don't want to have Beefcake losing because he's the one who transitions into Honky next, doesn't he then?
Yes.
The IC belt?
Yep.
So, I mean, so you got to keep Beefcake strong. You got to keep Valentine strong so I can kind of understand the finish. I enjoyed the early the exchanging of punches. I thought they did that really well. He got a little hate-filled where they're both grounding and pounding on each other. I enjoyed the little bit of brawling we got on the outside. Crowd's totally into it. I thought during Valentine's heat, he was just pretty much just beating the crap out of him, working over his neck area. I was a little surprised he was more working over the neck than working over a leg, but, you know, cool. I just didn't think Beefcake's comeback was all that dynamic. That's why I kept it down. It just was kind of ho-hum and pretty limited with, like, how Beefcake is as a performer. I mean, the dude has some charisma. The crowd is totally into the Barber gimmick. But, yeah, it just, it really just, you know, it was just his comeback just really wasn't all that great. I thought he almost crippled. I thought Beefcake was going to be crippled after the double arm suplex. And that was nasty. And the crowd popped huge once Beefcake hooked on the sleeper. Of course, you know, he gets out of it. And they tease cutting up Jimmy Hart's jacket post-match, which is always fun. Always gets a reaction. But the ref talks Beefcake down, so he gets the jacket back. You know, I enjoyed it a little bit more than the other one. But I thought Hammer's heat was really well focused, well done. Just beat on him. I just felt Beefcake's comeback could have been a little bit better and smoother and a couple of little other things. But, yeah, I didn't think it was a horrible match.
This feud is the bane of your existence, Pete. I look forward to the next time they fight to make sure we have
Well, let's put it this way, JR. You and I gave the one in July a 3.
Yeah,
so
this
one was.
Well, I remember really liking that one. That's when Pete took a hot shit all over us. So.
And it deserved you. And it deserved.
It. All right. Well, let's see what this next match deserves. And that is one of our bigger matches on the card. And that is Ricky the Dragon Steamboat taking on Ravishing Rick Rude. And Steamboat, this is actually, guys, his last MSG match for more than 3 years. Scott, we'll see him a couple more times, obviously. But as far as Madison Square Garden, we will not. And he's had some good little gems here at MSG, so he'll definitely be missed as we move through 88.
Uh-huh. I agree.
Business picking up, at least on paper. Rude and Bobby Heenan sashay to the ring with his big upper mid-card bout. Rude shits on the crowd and poses to booze. Steamboat then enters a big pop, and we get some feeling out with Gorillas trolling Bobby. The two trade some holes as we ease into things, and it picks up when Steamer breaks free, kicks Heenan, and flips Rude to the floor. Bobby's writhing in pain due to his neck, and Rude consoles him and then heads back in. Gorilla keeps messing with Bobby as Rude is being cautious, getting back into the ring. Rude comes back and dominates a test of strength, but Steamboat twists out of it and starts to work the arm, surviving a botched leapfrog along the way. Rude eventually goes to the eye to take over and starts to use some power strikes, but Steamer snuck in a crucifix for two and goes right back to the arm. Steamer comes up empty on a charge to the corner, swinging momentum again. Rude starts to slug away, fighting through pain and posing as well, and then sinks a seated chinlock, grinding the dragon as the crowd rallies him. Steamboat broke a lengthy hold and tried for a slam, but his back gives out. Rude goes to work, clubbing away and then latching on a tight bear hug. Gorilla's surprised that Steamboat hasn't gone to the martial arts yet, and then Steamboat claps free, but Rude dodges a dropkick and then lays in a hard right hand to the face. Rude went to an abdominal stretch, held that for a while, and then leveled Steamboat for two. Gorilla hates that lazy cover. Rude goes back to the seated chinlock, but Steamboat quickly stands up and drops back to break it. Rude is up first with a spike and spikes Steamer to the mat and then heads up top, but Steamboat gets caught with a shot on the way down. Steamboat starts to work his offense. We get a series of pin attempts by both, moving quickly enough, but the ref gets lost and misses one of them. Both men survive the flurry, but the crowd loved it, buying into each one. Rude drops Steamer with a back elbow for two and then slams him and drops a knee for another two count. Steamer recovers, but again collapses on a slam. Rude then whiffs on a charge to the corner. Steamboat goes up top and hits a chop to the head. As Steamboat's laying in shots, the bell rings. We get some confusion from everyone, and Fink reveals that we've hit a 20-minute draw, which I thought seemed a little short. Scott, I don't know if you have the actual time, you can let us know in a second. Heenan taught Steamboat, who returns to the ring, gets beaten down before cleaning house. I thought this was real disappointing. I thought it was sluggish in spots with too many wrestles. The finish was getting hot, but got cut short by the odd draw. And I wanted more from these two, and they just left me wanting more. Both looked good. It just wasn't clicking for them. And, well, let's talk about the match, and then I have some questions about Rude. I gave this 2.5 P. Well, actually, Scott, what's the length first?
The length was actually 20:28.
Really? It didn't feel like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, according to Graham. All right. Yeah, 20:28.
All right, I went 2.5 on this, Pete. What do you got?
I went 2.5 also. I agree with everything you said. I mean, psychology-wise, and storytelling, it told a story. Psychology, they worked, I mean, Rude worked the back, Steamboat worked the arm, on Rude's cutoffs, he'd cut off by hurting Steamboat's back, so, I mean, all that stuff made sense, But you're right. It was a lot of rest hold. If maybe they could have worked some high spots around it, or, you know, instead of we got the bear hug, we got the chin lock, then we had him jump a couple times in a row on the back during the chin lock. We got the abdominal stretch. Maybe do a couple high spots around it. Drop a couple elbows on the back. Do a knee drop to the back. Do a splash to the back. Do some stuff where you're in gate, where you're doing something besides just sitting there. And the same thing with Steamboat when he was just working the arm, was just clamping it on. He really wasn't grinding it in. But psychology-wise, it was storytelling. They told the story and it followed it, but it just, it wasn't dynamic and it lacked a spark, if you will. And you're right, it did start heating up on the finish. I liked how Steamboat was getting all of it. And then a quick elbow to the back caused Rude to gain the advantage on the quick pin, so I enjoyed that. Again, it made perfect sense in the story they were telling. But, yeah, they're just not where they would be years later in WCW.
I gave this 2.5 as well. I think that Ricky seemed to have had to slow down for Rude rather than Rude needing to speed up for Ricky. I understand you can't, hit the gas for 20 straight minutes, but I feel like they ate up more time in rest holds than they could have doing something else. And that's uncommon for Steamboat to have to slow down for his opponent. And again, I think Rude is realizing that he didn't have, remember, he was dealing with a lot of tags when he was in Crockett and he, shorter matches and not dealing with as many work rate guys when, say, he was in World Class. So I think now he's might be, I don't say over his head, but he realized that he's going to have to expand his repertoire, in ring to kind of go toe for toe with a lot of these mid card guys in the WWF. And we saw that in this match that, oh my God, I've never had to face a guy like Ricky Steamboat before. And holy shit, this match is dreadfully dull because he's not used to having to deal with a 20-minute match with a guy who can, wrestle you, round and round and up again.
And you make a really good point, Scott, about his Crockett history. This is where he's coming straight from Crockett, in 87. And he was part of a tag team with Manny Fernandez, and he was the bumper of the tag team. He wasn't
really
the offensive guy. So it's going to take a while for him to get some teeth. At this point, he really doesn't have a whole lot of token spots yet, which we see him finally get in the next year or two. He starts developing them. I think working with Steamboat here helps him. But I think when he starts working with Jake, he starts developing some more spots and stuff. And you see more of the Rude that develops later on in his career.
Yeah, there's definitely right now, Rude is almost, I don't want to say, he's not really green, but he's acting like a tag team.
And he's fucking acting like it. This was actually a conversation in our chat group today. That's what I was kind of looking forward to talking about. It's like, Rude so far has been disappointing to me. Like, I haven't seen much out of him in what we've watched. Like, I feel like he's so one note, and Pete nailed it, sitting on the back, chin lock. Like, no variance in the offense. He's just trying to eat time, it feels like. Just trying to get through to the end. And the end had been good because, like you said, he's a good bumper. Like he was on the tag team with Manny Fernandez. He's bumping around and selling. But his control segments suck. And he's almost kind of a weird conundrum of a wrestler. I'm trying to think of the word. Not dichotomy, but I don't know. I'll think of the word I'm trying to say. But he's in a weird spot because his wrestling style is almost that of a face. Like, his strengths is bumping, selling, and kind of exaggerated, but his control often sucks. But his character and look are such a heel that he can't really be a face. So now he's going to try and figure out how to work like a heel, and he hasn't really quite got there yet besides just sitting on a guy's back, which we've seen him do, like, almost every time. And I just haven't really been impressed with him yet.
Yeah, he finally starts getting it because he starts working with Jake, and I feel they start having some decent matches. And then he becomes the guy who has, the Ultimate Warrior's best matches. He's doing something. So I think it all depends on the type of person who he's working. And then again, maybe Warrior is more willing to work with him because they worked with each other in Dallas. That might have something to do with it. Who knows? But besides Savage, I thought Rude got the best matches out of Warrior.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
or is Warrior getting the best matches out of Rude? That was our debate today.
Yeah. But I think that I think right now, I mean, I think they were trying. Maybe this was what they were doing. Maybe this is their attempt was to give Rude somebody that can kind of help him break out of his, you know, break out of his comfort zone, and it failed. It didn't work. He didn't break out of his comfort zone. He got Steamboat to be dull, which really sucks. So, you know, maybe this changes, but hopefully it changes down the line. But this was a rough one, unfortunately. I mean, still good enough for 2.5, but you were hoping it would be better. That's what it came down to.
And still, that was the best match on the card,
maybe those hopes and wishes though are baked in from what we know. Like Rude would be like at this point, he hasn't really shown us anything for us to get excited about this match. So maybe I gotta calibrate my expectations. You know, like what we've seen from him so far should not in any way make us think something really good is coming. And we're just going by that we know later he's pretty good, but I'm still waiting to see it here. Like I'm curious when it hits, and I'm extra curious because of how he kind of ranked in the GWWE thing. And I'm like, is it character driven? Is it Rosie nostalgia driven? Like I'm waiting for the good stuff.
I think a lot of it is Rosie nostalgia driven. Cause really, I mean, I have you guys watched any of his matches with Hogan yet?
No, not yet.
I thought they weren't very good. I mean, they do a stupid arm wrestling spot. I mean, to me, that's scary bad. I honestly thought it didn't. I mean, it wasn't until he starts. I mean, I just remember him having good matches, which was weird with like Roddy Piper, but it was all towards the end of his run where he finally, I think people just stamped it because he had some memorable. I mean, the Jake Roberts angle was really memorable.
The matches
then they had
all
some
stuck,
decent
though.
Matches. What now?
Yeah, the matches are all kind of blah though.
Yeah, I think it's a rosy nostalgia type of thing.
Yeah, and we'll follow it here as we move forward for sure. So I'm curious to see when his like first real good matches, and I'm fearing it's like a year, 2 years away. So we'll see. But I think he's an interesting case for sure. So, all right. Any other thoughts on that match? Did you go, Scott? You went.
Right? No, I'm good. I'm good. All right. Natural spot for a break here. Why don't we take it? I don't know. As anticipated, JR, for December show, I'm fairly disappointed so far. And it's pretty clear.
Yeah, I mean, the last two matches have ticked up a little bit. Like, I had both at 2.5. But again, both kind of disappointing for guys like Hammer and Steamboat and in the perception of Rude. You know, like you would think maybe a little bit more. But so far, we haven't really clicked on any of these matches yet. I wouldn't say it's been, well, you were a little bit lower than me on a couple. So, as I say, it hasn't been, like, terrible. But, I mean, we're trending toward a pretty low-end show.
Mm. Yeah. What do you think so far, Pete?
Yeah, I've been trending towards a low-end, pretty bad show. But, you know, what's funny is I think Steamboat and Rude, actually, I don't know, are you guys going to review the Rumble of 88?
Yep.
See, I love that match.
Yeah, we'll see when we talk about it in a couple weeks.
Yeah, exactly. When we return, four more matches to go, including our main event. I'm sure there's some more guys that'll disappoint us. But first, this break is never disappointing
because.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place Dominations, JT Rosero, and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available on PlaceMination.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceMination.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceMination.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey, this is Dr. Tom Pritchard, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast on the Place to Be Nation.
Our nation, we are back taking a look at the December 1987 Madison Square Garden house show. Myself, my PSC Scott, and of course, so good old Sheriff Pete Schermacher in the house, breaking things down here. And you know, Scott, we talked about it's pretty rough open to this show, but I have faith, my friend, that things are going to turn around and we're going to finish strong, as one fool once said. So why don't we go ahead and move on to the Pop Culture Corner with Scott Criscolo. And as you may hear underneath us, that is the song Faith by George Michael. It is the number one song in the nation this week in 1987. And that does mean we're headed to Scott's Pop Culture Corner.
Thank you, JR. And busy Pop Culture. We've been light the last few weeks because we had three shows in 7 days.
Yep.
But a nice, fresh Pop Culture Corner this week. And as you can hear, George Michael from his awesome solo album, Faith.
Sports Machine.
The title track.
Yeah.
And I think you would look good in that leather jacket, JR, that he had in the video. Number two, our girl Whitney with her new single, So Emotional. Number three, as Pete gets so emotional about hating the Dream Team breakup matches. Number three, Is This Love by Whitesnake. Dropped a spot from last week. And by the way, this countdown came out on this day because December 26th was a Saturday. Number four, George Harrison, the ex-Beatle, with his first top 10 hit in, God, like probably 7 years with Got My Mind Set on You. Another JR favorite, a little Debbie Gibson action with Shake Your Love. Jody Watley at number six. with Don't You Want Me. A great, great list here. Number 7, Little Michael, The Way You Make Me Feel. At number 8, Catch Me, I'm Falling from Pretty Poison from the film Hiding Out. I don't know the film, but I know the song. Number 9, Cherry Bomb by John Mellencamp. And at number 10, a little In Excess with Need You Tonight. Actually, not a bad top 10. Pretty hot top 10 to end 1987. And the number 1 song, as mentioned, and as you hear, Faith by George Michael, which, as you've heard, has been in the top 10 for quite a while. And is actually an exceptional album. We'll probably get a couple more singles from that album as we move along. Just one movie, JR, that came out the day before, but it's actually a pretty important one. Was what many would consider a turning point for the lead actor in this movie.
Flight of the Navigator.
It's not Flight of the Navigator. It is Good Morning Vietnam. What are you choking the Agent Orange? Yeah, that's the napalm?
Can smell it coming from the Capron's house. 1965, Adrian Grenier arrives in Saigon to work as a DJ for the Armed Forces Radio Service. He's met at the airport by PFC Edward Garlick. Grenier's attitude and demeanor contrast sharply with the many staff members. His show consists of irreverent humor segments, rock and roll, which is frowned upon by its superiors since Second Lieutenant Stephen Hulk, Sergeant Major Philip Dickerson. Hulk adheres strictly to Army guidelines in terms of humor and music programming, while Dickerson is generally abusive to all the enlisted men. However, Brigadier General Taylor and other DJs quickly grow to like the new man and his brand of comedy. Of course, starring Robin Williams, Forrest Whitaker, Sinatra Sukapatana, Bruno Kirby, Robert Wool.
Then I'll be impressed.
Right, and Jacques Dujoulis, Richard Edson, and that's about it. There you go.
All right, so there you go. Good movie. And one of the most well-known, one of Robin Williams' first, like, real big-time roles that launched him into, he was a pretty popular actor anyway, but this was, like, a big one for him. All right. Let's go from
first,
Vietnam
this one
to
the, where he played the doctor.
Patch Adams?
Yeah, no.
Awakenings. Awakenings. That was about 3 years later.
Okay.
That was about 1990. But this was a big one for him. All right. We go from the rice patties to the gridiron because it's time to, for the last time, take the field.
All right, some quick filthy math here has Kelly Nelson at a very pathetic, sad, what's 26 plus 7? 33. And your boy, he's at a nice 36, healthy 36. Peter Winston at 8 for his one timeout. And Pete Schermacher making his season debut with the 87-88 season, Pete. So you're going to take part?
Let's do it.
All right.
This is week 16. It is the final week of the regular season. A lot of teams locked up, obviously, playoff spots. Some didn't. We'll give you the final standings at the conclusion. And actually, there were two games on this day. There were two games on this Saturday, and we'll do those first. All right. We will begin at Three Rivers Stadium in Pittsburgh, the Steelers hosting the Cleveland Browns, JR.
I'll go with Cleveland on the road.
Okay. Pete?
Yeah, I want to go to Cleveland. I think it's either Kozar or Sipe. So who is this? Is it Kozar?
Sipe. Brian Sipe's long gone. Kelly took the Browns as well, and the Browns win 19-13 in Pittsburgh.
Fuck you, Kelly. Going down.
Next, we go to the Metrodome in Minneapolis, the other Saturday game, and it is the Vikings hosting the Washington Redskins. Pete.
I'm going to go Redskins.
All right, JR.
You're going to give me Kelly as we alternate.
Oh, Kelly took the Redskins.
And was that at Washington? I'm sorry.
No, it was at in Minnesota.
Oh, I'll still go Washington.
Okay. Redskins win in overtime, 27-24. All right, the games that took place the next day. Next, we'll go to the Vet in Philadelphia, where Mr. Woodling and Mr. Kelly Nelson's trash bag Eagles hosting the Buffalo Bills, JR.
The Super Bowl champion Eagles to you, sir. And I will go with those Eagles at home.
They're still trash bags. Kelly took the Eagles. Pete?
I'll go Eagles.
And they won 17-7 over the Bills at the Vet. Let's go to the Astrodome in Houston, where the Oilers took on the Bengals, Pete.
I'm going to go the Bengals.
Okay. Kelly took the Oilers, JR.
Yeah, I'm taking Houston.
All right. Warren Moon throws for 280. Oilers win 21-17. Let's go to the Meadowlands. The Battle of Gotham. The J-E-T-S Jets, Jets, Jets. And the New York Football Giants, JR.
It kills me to do it, but I got to take the G-Men in that one.
Okay. Kelly took the Jets. Pete?
I'm going G-Men also.
Bill Sims threw for 264. Joe Morris rushed for a buck 32. Giants win 20-7.
Fuck yourself, Kelly.
Let's go to the Superdome, where you guys will be very soon, where the Saints host the Green Bay Packers. Who's up? Pete.
Packers.
All right. Kelly took the he took the Packers. JR?
Both teams are pretty shitty. I'll take Green Bay.
Yeah.
All right. Saints win 33-24. Domikowski threw for 219. Let's go to – let us go.
Man.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. I misspoke. Kelly took the Saints. Actually,
damn it!
A point for,
I was going to take
a point
Saints.
For Kelly. Point for Kelly.
Fuck me, Criscolo.
Oh please, you're still up by two. Actually, I think you're still up by three. All right, let's go to Arrowhead. The Chiefs hosting the Seattle Seahawks. JR.
Chiefs at home.
Okay.
Yeah, Chiefs at home.
Kelly took the Seahawks, which he definitely did. Bill Kenny threw for 320. Chiefs win 41-20. Yes.
Chiefs at home, baby. It's the biggest lock on the board.
That might have sealed. That might have sealed Kelly's fate. Let's go to the hole in the roof. The hole in the roof. God's house, Texas Stadium, and Irving. The Cowboys hosting the St. Louis Cardinals. Pete.
Cowboys.
JR.
Who did Kelly take?
Kelly took the Cowboys.
Yeah, I'll take the Cowboys.
Neil Lomax threw for 314, but somehow the Cowboys won 21-16. Herschel Walker rushed for a buck 37. Next, we will go to the Hoosier Dome in Indianapolis. The Colts hosting Tampa Bay. JR.
Oh, God. Another battle of dregs. I'll take the Colts.
Okay. Kelly took the Colts as well. Pete?
I'll go Colts also.
Colts win 24-6. Eric Dickerson, who is a new Colt, rushed for a buck 96. Let's go to Fulton County Stadium in Hotlanta. The Falcons hosting the Detroit Lions. Pete?
I'm going to go Detroit Lions.
All right. Kelly also took the Lions, JR.
Are there more fans in Atlanta or more points scored in the game? I will take the Falcons.
All right. Lions win 30-13. So Kelly gets one back there. Down the stretch here. Let us go to the Mausoleum out in Los Angeles. The Raiders hosting the Chicago Bears.
The Bears.
Bears.
The Bears.
Pete took the Bears as well. Kelly took the Bears as well. Bears win 6-3.
Oh, God.
Damn straight D, baby.
There you go. Let's go to Mile High. Broncos hosting the San Diego Chargers. Pete.
Wait, who's playing again? I'm sorry.
The Chargers and the Broncos in Broncos. Denver.
I'll go Denver.
Okay. Kelly took the Broncos, JR.
Yeah, me too.
All right. Broncos win in a shutout, 24-0. Let's go to Candlestick Park in San Francisco, the 49ers, and the Los Angeles Rams.
Niners.
Pete took the Niners, as and Kelly did as well. Niners win big, 48-0.
Jesus.
Big win for the Niners. And finally, Monday night at the Orange Bowl, it was the Dolphins hosting the New England Patriots, JR.
I'm going to take Marino.
Marino, okay. Pete?
Yeah, I'm going Marino.
Kelly took Marino as well. He threw for 243 yards, but the Pats win.
They never win there.
24-10. So here were the final standings. Here were the final standings as the season concluded. So let's see. All right, standings. I don't know where the heck the standings went, but anyway, here we go. All right, so. The 1987 season is over. Of course, there were only 15 games played because of the strike. The Colts won the East at 9-6. Told you how great the division was. Patriots 8-7. Dolphins 8-7. Bills 7-8. The Jets 6-9. In the AFC Central, Cleveland won it at 10-5. Oilers got a wild card at 9-6. Steelers 8-7. Bengals 4-11. AFC West, Denver won at 10-4-1. Seahawks got a wild card at 9-6. Chargers 8-7. Raiders 5-10. Chiefs 4-11. In the NFC, Washington won the division at 11-4. Dallas, Cardinals, Eagles all 7-8. Giants 6-9. Bears win the Central at 11-4. Vikings got a wild card at 8-7. And in the West, the Niners 13-2. Best record in the league. And the Saints, guys, the Saints finally make the playoffs at 12-3 as a wild card.
Wow, we're shitting all over these teams, and they've actually been pretty good, the Saints. And the
so there you go.
Yeah.
So when we get to January, we will see how the playoffs shake out. All right, let us go to the National Basketball Association.
By the way, final record in that. I had 47 on the year. Kelly had 44. Pete, you had 11. And Peter, 8. And the three of us all went 11 out of 14 in this week. It was the biggest week we've had. So.
Oh, there you go. So congratulations, JR. All right. There were 11 games on the docket in the NBA. Celtics beat the Clippers. The Lakers beat Utah. And the high scorer of the night, the human highlight film, Dominique Wilkins, had 37. And the Hawks crushed the Knicks 125-98. So the more things change, the more things have stayed the same. Since we are in the NCAA tournament in modern day, congrats, JR, and the Friars. We'll be playing Texas A&M on Friday afternoon, right? They're the first game Friday?
Sure are.
Yeah. Yes. Here's the top 10 in college basketball at this moment in the 19th. Of course, Indiana's your defending national champions. Your top 10, Arizona, Kentucky, Pittsburgh, North Carolina, Wyoming, Temple, Syracuse, Florida, Duke, and Purdue. And finally, on the frozen pond, there were 10 games in the NHL. Both our teams in action, JR, both lost. Whalers lost to Quebec 4-2. Bruins lost to the Islanders 2-1. Kelly's Flames lost to Edmonton 5-4. D'Amato's Rangers beat the Devils 5-3. Pete, you're a Blues fan, right? Or are you Blackhawks?
Blues.
Blues. They beat the Blackhawks 5-4. Remember Bernie Federko?
Heck yeah. Federko at center. Wayne Babbage at right wing.
Yep. Federko had two
goalie.
Yes, Federko had two goals in that game. And there is your pop culture corner. So let us head back to Madison Square Garden, JR.
All right. Craig DeGeorge backstage with Jimmy Hart. He's pissed about his jacket, wants the scissors banned. Valentine joins him, says Beefcake is using his a choke and not a sleeper, and it should be banned. The record book will show a win for him. So there you go.
Okay.
That does bring us to our next match, and that is Coco Beware taking on old Dino Bravo. Frenchie Martin is out first. Of course, Dino Bravo's new manager. He's rambling nonsense as we set up our next match. Bravo's freshly singles now, hooked up with the Slug Martin after the Dream Team is split up. He obviously lost out because Valentine gets Jimmy and he gets Jack.
One slug gets another slug. So
he's clearly switched to managing now after Ultimate Warrior destroyed his shoulder at the last MSG show.
Yes.
But yeah, not good. Here we go. Coco gets a big pop as he comes out. Pile driver's blaring. Frankie's on his arm. Al says Dino's bench press has jumped up close to 700 pounds. Gorilla says he's nearing that world record. I think we'll hear more about that soon. We get some feeling out with Bravo shoving and throwing Coco around to show off his power. Coco comes back with a slam and then works a headlock before knocking Bravo outside of the dropkick. Gorilla says Frenchie is clever as a manager, but I say fuck that. Coco goes back to the headlock but gets caught on a leap and clotheslined across the top rope. Bravo starts to unload his power offense with kicking, punching, and tossing Coco around. Dino grabs a near fall after a gut wrench and goes to a bear hug. Dino maintains control as Gorilla asks if Frenchie really needs a monocle. I say no, he's just an idiot. Bravo gets two off a nice back suplex, but Coco blocks a backbreaker with a backdrop and starts to jab away. Bravo's rattled as Coco's all over him with a flurry of punches, a headbutt, and a dropkick for a near fall. Coco whiffs on a dive, and Dino polishes him off with the side suplex. Excuse me. Asian Orange still hanging around. Coco wipes out both Dino and Frenchie after the bell. This was fine thanks to Coco's bumping and offense, but even Dino wasn't terrible here as he usually is. They kept it short. He unloaded all his power moves. Christ, it's late. Fine enough, but fuck Frenchie. He's a piece of shit. So I went one star on this, Scott.
Your official runtime is 6:38, perfect length for these two. I gave it a half star. Kind of similar to Rude. Although I honestly would expect more out of Bravo, but we've already all discerned that Dino Bravo is a talentless pile of shit. And the way he overacts when he bumps, he overacts just in general. It's almost like he's playing wrestling rather than actually being a wrestler. It served its purpose, I guess. It's a shame Coco had to drop it here, but at least it was short and painless, and obviously Frenchie realized he's a terrible wrestler and he's probably an even worse manager. I don't know, JR. Maybe we should do the top 100 managers. I'm curious to see who you would rank lower, Frenchie or fucking Fuji.
Fuji would be higher than Frenchie.
So anyway, Pete, nothing worthless. More for me to say here. I mean, nothing more for me to say here. You know, Bravo wins. He's another one who I've had, like, no patience for. And, you know, Coco held his end of the deal.
I thought it was a stinker. I give it a quarter of a star. Bravo's just terrible, absolutely terrible. And, I mean, I always felt like Vince wanted to push him against Hogan because the guy was around, like, forever and always got pushes. But, you know, but essentially it never went anywhere and good because he stinks. Good riddance.
All right.
Well, he ain't going anywhere, unfortunately. But
no, definitely not. Definitely not. But at least they get him away from Valentine. Let Hammer break free a little bit. All right. There you go. Let's move on quickly then. Takes us to our next match. More tag action as the Killer Bees taking on the Old Islanders. Some tag action up next. Bobby Heenan leads out the Islanders for a key tag match. Bobby hops on the mic and asks if anyone's seen a dog around here before the Bees come jogging out. Al says the Bees are underrated and deserve a look at a title match, and Gorilla thinks that could happen if they get a win tonight. Gorilla asks Bobby where the whereabouts of Matilda, and Bobby just plays dumb. Blair and Haku open up with basic offense as Blair cranks a headlock. Tama tags in and begs off as Gorilla rips the Islanders for what they did to Matilda. Blair gets an atomic drop and goes to a headlock again as Al talks about Tama's development. Brunzell tags in and keeps control, grounding Tama with a headlock. Tama escapes and Haku tags in. Gorilla calls him the brains of the team. Brunzell keeps Haku off balance, tags in Blair. Haku turns the tide with a back suplex, and the Islanders go to work, quick tagging, going to the eyes and throat, mixing in strikes and double teams while fending off comebacks. Gorilla says the Islanders have become dangerous these days. The dominance continues as the Islanders are masters of controlling the heat segment. They're so good at it, putting on a clinic. Blair gets a desperation suplex and makes a tag, but the ref is tied up with Haku. He disallows it. Blair is able to pop Tama with a leaping forearm and makes the official tag. Brunzell meets Haku in the ring and then runs through both him and Tama. Brunzell gets a sleeper on Haku, but things break down. All four guys brawl in the ring, and in the chaos, Tama is able to deck Brunzell with a headbutt off the middle rope and drag Haku on top for the win. Fine, but again, a step behind what you'd expect it to be. Slower pace than normal. Didn't have the usual heat the Islanders would have. And the Islanders are always fun, but the Bees are usually good too, but they just, again, didn't get on track, much like that Rougeau's match. They just couldn't really kick it into gear. It just felt like they were going through the motions, which sucks, because I really look forward to Islanders matches, and this one disappointed a bit. So I went 2 stars here, Pete.
Yeah, I went a star and 3/4. I'm with you on pretty much everything you said. I mean, the shine by the Bees is pretty decent. Now, I wish the Islanders would have set up the heat a little more heelish. I mean, instead of, like, doing something heelish, he hits a really nasty-looking suplex to set up the heat, which is more of a babyface spot. But the Islanders decided to use it as a heel spot to set up their heat, which I didn't particularly like. But then the Islanders kicked the crap out of the Bees. I thought their heat segment was pretty solid and good. But, yeah, it was just missing a step. I mean, they just work better. I think the Bees work better, like, with a team, like, with the Hart Foundation, who are more of a storytelling-driven team. While I think the Islanders just work better with, like, a go-go-go strike force type team where they're both different. I just don't think they just meshed. I think there's just a styles – slightly different styles clash, which you wouldn't think because the Hart Foundation had good matches with Strikeforce, but for some other reason, these others just didn't. It was just different. I just think it was just a slight styles clash.
Your official runtime, 10:45. I gave this 2 stars as well. I'm glad the Islanders got a clean win here. I will say that because I think, as we've said often, JR, this whole, you know, the whole mask thing was getting really fucking tedious. I'm just glad that the Bees just lost clean. They're another team that, you know, it's kind of running out of time, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, which makes the Survivor Series thing even more confounding that they, you know, had both of those jobber teams win. Why not? I mean, they're clearly not really going much further. Like you said, the mask thing doesn't even get broken out here, and they just lose pretty easily. So it makes you wonder even more why they went with them and the Stallions instead of a bigger team than one of them.
Surprise booking just for shits and grins never work, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, the match itself is fine. I mean, we love Haku and Tama. They're both awesome. But at least they won this match clean and can move on. You know, because at the moment, we're not sure who the next contenders are for Strikeforce. Obviously, the Hart Foundation, you know, still sitting there as number one contenders, and there's other teams as well. So this is a big win for the Islanders, and maybe they'll start getting some you know, house show circuit matches in January. We'll see what happens, but it's a big enough win for the Islanders, kind of pushing forward and much needed and clean at least. That's the that's the best part right there. So a win for the Islanders, Jer.
All right, let's move on. One sec. Here we go. All right, our next matchup here is more tag action. The usual December fair, like I mentioned earlier in the night, and that is midget tag team action as Clubber Lang. Cowboy Lang.
That would have been great.
Cowboy Lang and Chris Dube, take on Lord Littlebrook and Little Tokyo. And Mr. Dube formerly wrestled as the Karate Kid on the 11/24/86 MSG House Show. If you remember that, Scott. Mm-hmm. Yep. So you know it's December when they're dragging out the midgets. The crowd seems mildly interested in this, but I am not. Gorilla and Al make the usual quips. The match has the usual hijinks. Al says Littlebrook is the most successful midget wrestler of all time. This goes on for a bit with the comedy and stooging until Lang pins Tokyo with a sunset flip. Pretty short for a tag match as they keep the car chugging along. I went half a star. That's my standard midget grade. I don't put much more thought than that. Scott, what do you have?
Your official time, 3:19, and as everyone anticipates, I gave it a dud. It's fucking terrible. However, based on the criteria, JR, of when we were talking about longevity for tag teams, you could technically put Lord Littlebrook and Little Tokyo in the top 100 for EP because they definitely wrestle more than five times, it seems like. So. Well,
Will and some others already had them like in their fucking top 100 anyway.
Well, so. No, that's true, too. But, no, this fucking shit sucks. This is crap filler. Pete, I got nothing more to say. D-U-D-D-D-D.
Yeah, I'm going to throw on the dud there, too. I mean, it was 3 minutes. We got, well, maybe two comedy spots, and they go home. So, I mean, hey. Bye-bye.
Dog shit.
Yep.
Why book him? Honestly, give him 3 minutes for that.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know why either. I mean, maybe other stuff ran long, and they were there as like an emergency kind of thing or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. But anyway, I'm fine. Until next December, hopefully.
Okay. Yes.
All right, the Fink comes out. He announces that the curfew for tonight has been waived. He wishes everyone a happy 1988 before running down next month's card. We'll talk about that in probably about a month or so. All right, our main event time. Here we go again. Macho Man Randy Savage taking on the Intercontinental Champion Honky Tonk Man. These two heated rivals giving it another go at MSG. Honky still has his gold, but it could be tenuous tonight, guys, because Jimmy Hart is locked in a cage above the ring to keep him from getting involved. Honky gets booed loudly as he struts out with Jimmy and his girlfriend Peggy Sue, we haven't seen before. Alan Gorilla try to figure out who Peggy is as we get settled in. Savage and Liz get a big-time pop, and we see if he can finally regain the gold here. We get some posturing and stalling until Jimmy finally gets locked up in the cage with an assist from Macho. Jimmy's great here, freaking out as the cage goes up, while Honky's desperately trying to prevent it from going up. He's kind of hanging off the cage. Honky and Peggy regroup as Savage baits on the fans. Macho gets hot, punching and choking away while keeping his bandana and shades on. Savage is all over the champ, battering him with a knee drop, a knee lift, a back elbow. Gorilla calls Peggy a back-to-the-future refugee as Honky bails. Savage comes out, beats on him some more while finally taking off his gear and glaring at Peggy. Back inside, Savage keeps on him until the champ finds a gap and chucks Savage to the floor. Honky beats on him out there and then slides back in to regroup. Savage nursing his elbow as he comes back inside and Honky meets him with some strikes. Savage comes back with jabs but misses a charge to the corner and slams hard to the buckles. Liz is concerned as Honky kicks away and then hooked to neck fights. Savage powers out and hits a backdrop and elbows Honky before picking up the pace, hitting a nice vertical suplex. Honky dodges an elbow drop and whiffs on a punch and tumbles over the top rope. Savage shoves him back inside, snaps his neck on the top, and hits an axe off the top and hits another one to the floor, and then a third in the ring for a near fall. Honky recovers, tries to the shake, rattle, and roll, but Savage blocks it and knees Honky to the floor. Peggy grabs Liz and shakes her, causing Savage to leave the top rope and make the save. Honky sneaks back in and pelts Macho with the belt to knock him to the floor. Honky rustles up the ref, but we find out that he saw the belt shot and DQ'd Honky, giving Savage the win, but not the gold. Jimmy gets lowered, and we get some fighting after with Savage yanking off Peggy's wig, but she bolts to the back before we can find out her identity. This was good, but again, we're getting diminishing returns in this feud. The crowds have gotten less hot by the match. The cage shuff was neat, and Jimmy was awesome, but the match just doesn't have that crisp pop it had early on when we saw it the first couple times. The finish is convoluted, too. It dulls the crowd reaction until the announcement. They should have just called the bell right away instead of what they did. We don't need the swerve. Just call the bell. Fine match, but flatter than it should be given what these guys should be doing. And they really need to get them apart from each other now. We're done. They fought enough. We've seen it enough. And each time has gotten a little bit worse and a little bit less crowd interest. So I went 3 stars just because I still really enjoy it. But it's slipping down the slope of diminishing returns. And I like the Peggy Sue stuff. I like Jimmy Hart. But the match itself is just starting to get a little bit repetitive. We need something new for these guys, Pete.
You think the crowd knew that was Sherry Martel?
I don't know. I mean, it's pretty obvious.
I think it was depends where you were sitting.
Yeah,
probably. Okay.
But you can clearly see it's her when they rip the wig off. They don't they don't say it at all, but it's obvious it's her. You can see it.
Yeah, I didn't know, but right when I saw her working ringside, you're like, damn, that's Sherry Martel.
Right.
When,
yeah.
I mean, just the way.
Although she hadn't really managed yet, so we know it's her because we've seen her manage.
Yeah.
So they may not have known because they hadn't really seen her as a manager to this point.
That's a good point, and she's just probably you're not thinking that it's Sherry Martel under a wig because why would they do that? Good for you. I didn't like it as much as you. I thought it was a lot of bullshit going on. It was a lot of just didn't seem, I don't know. It wasn't working for me. I give it like a star to 3/4.
Oh,
it
wow.
Just
worse than Iron Mike Sharp, huh?
Yeah, I honestly prefer. I expect more from Randy Savage and Honky Tonk Man. Honestly, I think it has something to do. It might be do with expectations. I don't expect Iron Mike Sharp and Steve Jones to save his show, and I was counting on Savage and Honky here, and they just didn't do it for me. I thought there was a lot of just aimlessness. I think it made the booking on top of it just made it just a cluster.
Well, before I give my grade, and your match time is 13:13. All right. So the first match we did was in September. We gave it 3.5, JR, mm-hmm. both of us. Then the match on the October Science main event, the big one, that was also we gave 3.5. Then they fought again in the November house show, and we gave it 3.5. I gave it 3.5. You gave it a 3. And that takes us to – then they fought on the December house show right here. And I'm going to give it 2.5. It was good. It wasn't awful. But – and Hogan – Hogan. Well, I thought of Hogan because Savage's pop was nuclear. I mean, he is a fucking stud right now. The show itself – or the match itself – definitely as the show – as the match progressed, we knew that Savage was not winning the belt back. So I think the crowd knew that. Although, maybe there was an inkling with Jimmy above the ring and, with it being a December show and that the rest of the card was pretty shitty, that maybe they were going to get rewarded with a big Savage title win. So maybe there – if you were there that night, maybe you thought there was a puncher's chance that Savage would win the title. Maybe. After all this dog and pony show and shit endings and all this other stuff, maybe there was a chance. But if you went into this knowing or thinking that Savage was not winning, then the match did lose its, like you said, JR, diminishing returns. And if the return is not Savage finally winning the title, then nobody cares. And that sucks for Savage. But fortunately, at least in my opinion, hearing the crowd, Savage, this does not hurt Savage whatsoever. He's still pretty hardcore and top of the line and is a star. And he's a guy that obviously is destined for great things in 1988. But the match itself has been, was okay. But obviously we need to separate these two and Honky needs to go off and do something else. And at this point, Savage is definitely not winning the title. He would have obviously won it by now. And, with Jimmy Hart over the ring, you would have thought this was the chance. And it wasn't. So, Honky's still over as a heel. Savage still way over. But, all right, this has run its course. It's time to move on.
Which feud do you guys like better, Honky feud versus Savage or the Honky feud versus Steamboat?
They both are really enjoyable.
Because I thought those were his two best feuds, so
I'd probably go Savage only because the beginning of it was so good. It's okay. Fallen off. Like the first 2 months of the Savage feud would be my favorite followed by Honky, followed by the end of the Savage Feud, if I could do it that way. If I broke it into like 2 month kind of chunks. But I like the beginning of the Savage Feud is so good that I prefer it to Honky.
Yeah, I mean we'll get there. I mean we won't tip our hat now, but we'll document Honky's 88 because I think we see a change in him, but we'll talk about it when we get there. But I mean Steamboat, unfortunately, you wonder who. You don't want to compare Steamboat and Savage as wrestlers because, I mean, you know, that's kind of apples and oranges. But Savage was just so much more over than Steamboat. And I think we've talked about it, JR, how it felt like Steamboat definitely cooled off. I would say Savage, even though that first match that they had, the first match Steamboat and Honky had in what? June, I guess it was June or July. I guess it was July. Was incredible. I mean, Steamboat was so vicious. It was good to see him out of his shell. So that was pretty awesome. But Honky definitely motivated Savage into being the incredible babyface that he is at this moment. So in that instance, Pete, if it worked in the sense of did he help both guys? Well, Steamboat really didn't need helping. Because he was obviously in and on the shit list anyway. But he definitely helped Savage. No doubt about that. And if that was what he meant to do, he did his job. So that's what I think in terms of comparing those two guys and those two instances.
Do you guys because think Honky definitely helped Savage. True that he was supposed to drop the title to Savage, but that's how Savage ended up getting the world title because of that.
Oh, we'll definitely get there.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there. You'll be there. Part of it, Pete. All right. So that wraps up the show. All right, let's do grades. Then we can wrap it up. all right, match of the night. I mean, we have some pretty disparate votes here across the board in our awards. I'm going Savage Honky for my match of the night, Scott.
Yeah, it definitely was. It definitely was. Valentine and Beefcake comes pretty close, but the main event definitely was the big one.
Pete?
I'm going Steamboat and Brood.
Okay. You don't want to go Sharp and SD?
No.
Okay.
Mock me, that's fine.
Worst match of the night, our Cousin Junior Award. I thought this was a pretty easy choice. I went Rock and Robin versus Sherry.
I mean, I had duds up the wazoo, but that was the worst of the duds.
I'm going to go with, I'll go with that one. Why not?
Yeah, it was bad.
There's a lot you could pick from. I mean, I don't think it was so cut and dry. We could have gone with the minis. We could have gone with Bravo, Coco. I mean, there's a lot of shit on this thing.
All right. MVP award, our Hulk Hogan award, which may have to get renamed for me alone, but I went Randy Savage again. To me, when he's on, he's just head and shoulders above everyone else. From a working perspective, the heat, everything he brings to the match, I thought he was the best overall tonight.
I agree.
Yeah, I know. He performed well. I'll go Savage. That's fine.
All right. Our Uncle Elmer Award for the worst worker of the evening, I thought, again, was a pretty easy one. I went Rockin' Robin. She is just fucking brutal.
Yeah. I mean, Bravo's close. Fucking Duggan and Sika. But Rockin' Robin, she set herself apart tonight and not in a good way.
I'm going to go Sika.
All right. You know what's interesting? We shit on Dino Bravo every time, but I don't think he's actually won this. I feel like there's always been someone slightly worse than him on all these shows. Like,
yes,
I don't think he's
no,
won.
That's true.
Looks like he split it once, but that's it so far,
and,
which is funny.
He's usually paired against a pretty good worker. Like, I mean, right. Coco's a decent worker.
Back in July, back in July he won it. Me and Scott picked him, and Pete, you picked Beefcake from that match.
Oh, there you go.
But that's the only time he's won, so it's funny that everyone craps on him, but Sika has won it more times than he has. All right, best moment I actually enjoyed the most was Jimmy Hart getting raised in the cage. I thought the crowd was super into it. Honky kind of hanging off the cage, Jimmy flipping out. I thought Jimmy was real good in that match, and I enjoyed that part.
Yeah, no, I agree. I like Jimmy, too.
My favorite moment was when Beefcake hooked on the sleeper. I thought they really believed he was going to put Valentine out.
Yeah, that match. The crowd was so into that match. All right, and finally, the Morocco Award for the biggest juiced guy on the night. I thought this is an easy choice for Dino Bravo.
Oh, yeah. He was, and he had the bad bloat gut going on, and it was rough. But there wasn't much, though. There wasn't much pickings. Everybody else was either fat or small. So
I don't know, man. Savage kind of scared me a little bit here. Those eyes look like he had the roid eyes going.
Bravo.
But I'll go with Bravo.
Yeah, he's fucking massive. All right. Let's see. What do we got here, then? Final grade time. All right. So out of 10, I went 3 this month. It's on the low end of shows we've seen. Not the worst. Back in May, Scott, I went 2.5 for that gym. But 3 is one of the lower end ones. January, I went 3.5. Last December was a 2.5. We went 2.5, 2 last December. Like I mentioned, December is usually not a good month at all. So I went 3 here, Scott. What do you got?
I mean, I don't know. I can't. I have to look back, but I don't think I've given 3 duds on a show ever. To this point, I mean, 3. I mean, this show was awful. I'm giving it a 2, which might be the lowest I've ever given anything. I mean, this show is such a drizzler. It really is.
You went 2.5 on January 87, and you went 2 last December.
Okay, yeah, and I bet I got to see how many. I got to check how many duds I had.
You went 2
one,
back in June of 86. Hey, you've got a few 2s out.
A few 2s. All right. Well, maybe. Well, the main event. And the draw, as much as it wasn't a great draw, was still a really good match. Keeps it from getting lower than 2, but 3 duds is 3 duds. I mean, that can't be ignored for me. So 2 for me.
I think 2 is the lowest we've ever given. I don't think anyone's given a 1.5 or
no
lower. So
I'm sure
2
we'll
is pretty much
more.
Rock bottom for us, unless we get something just abysmal that we'll see. All right, Pete, what do you have out of 10?
Yeah, I give it a 2.5, and mostly based on the fact that at least there wasn't any matches that went long where I'm like, God, stop this match. I mean, Rude and Steamboat, I wanted it to end, but it still wasn't the worst thing in the world. At least all the bad matches were relatively short. Nothing, you know, I don't think anything really overstayed its welcome.
Agreed. All right, let's go ahead and wrap things up then. Scott, we're off now, likely for a couple of weeks. We got some travel and some other stuff going on. So we're tentatively scheduled to be back April 2nd, and that would be the January 88th. Saturday Night's Main Event, we start 1988. So we're off to then. It's one of our longer breaks we're going to have here, just about 3 full weeks. But there'll be plenty of stuff to keep you occupied. Obviously, Scott will get to your shows in a minute. We have a new Made the Cut coming out this week from Aaron George and I as we continue through our list. There may be a Jeff Learns Wrestling this week as well. Rumors are flying around the internet that could be back. We'd be looking at WrestleMania 4. So that could be coming, and there's plenty on the PWO feed, plenty on the Placement Nation feed. So we'll be gone for a few weeks, but everyone else will be around. Again, be sure to check out the GWWE results as well, and, of course, start to get ready and prepare yourself for the tag team event as well. Pete, what do you got going on? Anything you want to plug?
Oh, yeah, man. You can always catch me on WorldCast Wednesday with my boys Kelly Nelson and Johnny Sorrow. Along with This Week in Wrestling Indies and International, when me and Tim break down a bunch of indie wrestling television shows we like CWF Mid-Atlantic, NWL St. Louis, NXT, and then we usually pick some show we want to watch and we review that. So if you want to hear some takes around the indies, that's your show for us over there on the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation feed.
Check those out. Great as always. And Scott, what do you got going on?
We do have a brand new main event this week. Nate and I will be recapping last night's, almost said payback, last night's Fastlane pay-per-view. And then Chad and Mr. Willie will join us for our next installment of our New Japan Classic match pick. So a fresh episode this week. So stay tuned.
All right. That'll do it for us. We'll talk to you in a few weeks. Like I said, if you're interested in participating in the PTBN GWWE tag team version, let us know. We'll add you to the Facebook group as we start to ramp that up. And also, if you're going to be going to Mania, let us know. We'll get you added to the group to join us for our pre-party at a bar near the Superdome or Bourbon Street somewhere. Otherwise, everyone take care. Follow us on Facebook.com/PlaceBNation, Twitter, Place2BNation, Instagram, Tumblr, PlaceBNation.com/Amazon for all your shopping needs, and check out our free Vintage Vault refresh ebooks as well on the right hand side of PlaceNation.com. So, for Scott, for Sheriff Pete, I'm Justin. We're out. We'll talk to you in a few weeks. Everyone, take care.
I want to treat you like a queen, cooking clean. Get your bubble bath ready so I can rub you with Noxzeme. And watch how gentle I'll be when I rub your back. And after that, there's dinner and cognac. A little romance for the quiet storm. And a lot of loving for the whole night long. I'm gonna caress your body and give you a kiss. And I'll rub you down where you've been missed.
nibble on your navel and kiss your thigh. Play with your hair, cause I'm on a love high. Well, I don't know, it's the way that I am. Introduce me to your mother and I say hello, ma'am. Well, I don't know, it's the way I was brought up. Respect my female and never get caught up in another affair. And I believe the same, and if you try to be slick, then the doors are open. You know, sweetheart, I told you once, and I don't feel I have to tell you anymore. It's you that I want, and it's you that I'll do for. Since we both know what we want, let's get it together and fly like two birds of a feather. Cause I'ma protect me and look out for my feelings, and that's why I always try to be loyal and gentle, laying your legs. Serve the females in case I'm on sleep camp. And if I have to break out, you don't deserve to live the good life and love the black hummingbird. It may be sexy, but it is true. If you try to taunt me, then I'ma adore you. But if you treat me right, then I'll treat you with open arms and a rose just to greet you. Love you dearly, respect and care for you, my dear. So how could you ignore the way I feel? It's real from the start. So I stop playing games and master the art.